Merkle Media.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Well, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary's Tack Theratrix.
I am Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have
for
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the CS hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you are watching us on Rockfin, Odyssey, Band.video, Vigilante.tv, or you're listening wherever podcasts are served, I appreciate it. Thank you so much. If you like the show, why would you? But if you do, you can rate it. You can subscribe to it. You can share it with your friends and family. I certainly do appreciate that. The website is theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. You can find me on Twitter at Macroaggression. And we do have an Instagram account as well, Macroaggression Podcast. Go check it out. Thank you so much to our sponsors. EMP Shield is building the best EMP device out there, EMP protection device out there. In fact, it's so well built that the military was kind of interested in their design for it, which is kind of, I think, maybe a nice vote of confidence. It's available for your home, for your car, for your motorhome, if you have one, or boat, or power generator, whatever you've got, you can put one of these devices on it and it'll blow out before your circuitry does. It's really great to have. It'll protect you against EMPs, obviously, solar flares, and even lightning, especially lightning. I think that's probably the more practical thing that you'll have to deal with. It's many times more efficient than a single-use military design. It can handle up to 40 EMP strikes. It's fitted to household circuit breakers with just four wires. You can do it yourself if you want. You can follow the installation videos either on their site or on YouTube. It installs like a Type 2 surge protector. You know, so it's doable. I think this fits well with our program of, you know, be proactive, be prepared, and don't be reactive. Let's think about these things in advance. Hopefully you don't need it, but if you do, you can go to empshield.com. You can read up about it, and if you find something you like, you can use the promo code MACRO. It will definitely save you some money. Also, they have bundle packages as well, so if you want to get one for your house and your car at the same time, do that. Brings the cost per unit down substantially. So check it out. See what you think. EMPshield.com, promo code MACRO. Links are in the description for that. Also, again, back to the theme. I hope you don't need storable food, but you got to have it just in case. You'd feel really dumb if you knew that supply chain issues were happening, if you knew that they're blowing up food processing factories, that Bill Gates is buying all the land, that the actual seeds are being held in a seed vault in Norway, that the largest producers of fertilizer is Russia, and that potash isn't getting out, and Ukraine is one of the largest exporters of wheat. That wheat is not getting out. There's food problems. Okay, the people over at My Patriot Supply have been doing this for a long, long time. They have storable food that you can buy. You can get online, go to preparewithmacroaggressions.com. It's the website that they built just for us. You can knock it all out with a few clicks, get yourself set up for, you know, months, really. And if, look, maybe you've already done this. Maybe you've already been proactive. Maybe you've been grabbing extra food at the grocery store. I hope you have. Please do. And if this product isn't right for you, then do it yourself by all means. Or, you know, listen, if you've got someone like a family member lives out of state, maybe they think you're a little unhinged, that's fine. You can send them some food. They'll really thank you for it when the trucks stop running and the gasoline doesn't get distributed and the shelves are empty. You'll have a backup. You won't be fighting some asshole on aisle five over the last can of baked beans. You know, you definitely want to prevent that. So, not trying to freak you out, but I'll just say again, this is one of those situations where you're better off being a couple months early rather than a day late. You know, so preparewithmacroaggressions.com is the website. You can take there's discounts that they have right now, and they'll just ship it to your house, man. It's pretty easy. I've got a bunch. Don't come to my house if you're hungry, though, because we'll have to shoot you. But so get your own storable food. I think that's reasonable. Okay. Announcement. Surprise announcement, I guess. I can announce it now. I have a radio show that is starting on TNTradio.live. I'm going to be on the air Saturday mornings for 2 hours with an interview show. Thank you to the team over there at TNT Radio. They're based in Australia. It's an Australian internet radio company that's heard all over the world. Go take a look at their shows, man. They've got some hosts over there that you would definitely recognize. Flattered to be among the hosts chosen to be there. I'm going to do a couple hours on the weekend. It'll be fun. Have some interviews with people, talk about current events, see what's going on. So TNTradio.live is the website. I will be on Saturday mornings from 10 a.m. to noon Eastern time, which puts me at like midnight Brisbane, Australia time on Saturday night, going into Sunday morning, and about like 3 p.m. in the UK. So if you're interested, If you don't get enough of the macroaggressions program, well, there'll be some shenanigans going on over at TNTradio.live. So thanks to the team over there. I'm excited to get that going and introduce you to my brand of insanity. You may be sorry. You may be sorry that you signed me up for that. Well, I want to talk about something that is not a whole lot of fun, but I think it is. Well, it's necessary. You know, we've been, I do a lot of work on depopulation. You know, again, it's not the most uplifting topic, but I think it's one of these things where once you start to even acknowledge that it is a thing and it sort of enters your mind, then you start to see it everywhere. You know, you start to see the fingerprints of this eugenics operation that, you know, it's very tempting to say, well, oh, that's Hitler stuff, genetic, you know, forced sterilization and depopulation and all of this stuff, racial profiling, that's all Nazi Germany. For sure. That was happening quite a bit in Germany. But did you know that the Germans got their ideas from somebody else? And you're probably not going to like what I have to say about this if you're an American, but I always bring the receipts. You know, I'm not going to just spout off some nonsense without having the facts to back me up on this. And given what we've gone through over the last couple of years with COVID, and we've watched some of the people that are moving to the forefront in leadership roles would involve Bill Gates. And if you know anything about Bill Gates, he comes from a family that's deeply involved in eugenics. And eugenics is basically like the thinning of the herd, the getting rid of the undesirables. It's not his concept. It was, you know, it was sort of Darwin was talking about it a couple hundred years ago, and it comes out of this British round table philosophy of like, we've got to get rid of the poor, you know, all those brown people taking up too much based on our colonies, you know, and they want to thin this herd out. And these ideas, though obviously psychopathic, are not limited to the old timey British white folks out there. And it's not necessarily limited to the goose stepping Germans either. I mean, this is a concept that is in play now, right now in America, in the form of a group called Planned Parenthood. Now, Planned Parenthood is sold to the general public as a defender of women's reproductive rights. You know, where if you want to go in there and get yourself some birth control, it's the place to do it. If you want to go in there and get an abortion, you can do that, right? It's known for that. But it is sold to the general public as being a defender of women. I wish that were true. That would be nice. It's a nice cover story. But the truth is that when you dig into the roots of Planned Parenthood, you find some diabolical people. And what you actually notice is that this isn't about women's rights. It's about depopulation. And it has always been about depopulation. This isn't some pivot that they used, just recently. This is something that's been going on since the formation, really. So let's get into this a little bit. So Planned Parenthood was founded in 1916, not with that formal name. That name came later, but the organization that later became Planned Parenthood was founded in 1916 in Brooklyn, New York. And it now has over 600 locations all across the United States. It was the first birth control center in the USA. Okay, so it's known, it's well known here. For those of you internationally, it's well known in America. They're not hiding it. It's not like some back alley type place where you have to knock three times and give them the secret handshake to get in. It's on the corner of major streets with big signs and Planned Parenthood, and come on in and we'll take. And part of their sales pitch is that, you know, we're helping not just women with reproductive rights, but specifically disadvantaged women, women that don't really have the funds, you know, to get on birth control pills or to get these depo shot or to get an IUD or something like that, or get an abortion, you know, like, you don't really have a ton of options if you're limited financially. So we're going to be this altruistic organization that will help you out if you are in a bind and you need this. But the thing is that the fact that that they place these organizations, they place these locations, the 600 locations, in economically disadvantaged communities sort of provides them cover, because they say, listen, we're just trying to help out people that don't have the financial resources to pay for these things themselves. But when you dig into the ideology behind this, part of the reason why these are placed in economically disadvantaged communities is because they don't want any more of those people around. You know what I mean? If you've got the money to pay retail price for an abortion, you're not getting it at Planned Parenthood. If you're on a discount plan and you don't have the funds, you're going to go to Planned Parenthood. And where are they? Well, we're going to get to where they're located and in the ins and outs and the stats behind that, because God knows I love statistics, not necessarily about this. This is kind of a dark topic, but I think it's important for us to recognize that the numbers don't lie. People do. And the numbers show that when it comes to placing these in locations, and I worked in commercial real estate for a while, and I know how much I know that there are computer programs that before you want to put a 7-Eleven on a particular street corner, there's computer programs that you can put in the coordinates and then pull out a mile radius, 2 mile radius, 3 mile radius to find out what the average income is and what the demographics are. All that information is available, right? So it's not accidental that they're putting these in poor communities, but their cover story is pretty solid, because they've always pretended to be there as a defender of women's rights, and more in particular, a defender of women's rights that are disadvantaged financially. So let's get into this. So Margaret Sanger, have you heard that name before? She was a monster. I mean, it was the founder of Planned Parenthood and a true believer in the social need for eugenics to thin out the herd. Now, eugenics is the terminology that the scientific sounding name that's given to depopulation. And listen, it was only recently rebranded. You know, like the British Eugenics Society changed its name in like 1989. So it's not, and I'm not talking, not 1889, 1989. You know, so it's not like they just figured out that it's a bad look, which is hilarious. So I think you know, there's a lot of people that say, well, maybe not a lot, that say Margaret Sanger wasn't a eugenicist. She was doing Planned Parenthood because she was a you know, looking out for the population of women. Well, let's take this quote from the Planned Parenthood website, and then you decide whether or not those trying to defend her have a leg to stand on or not. Again, from the Planned Parenthood website, not InfoWars. Okay. Quote, Sanger believed in eugenics, an inherently racist and ableist ideology that labeled certain people unfit to have children. Eugenics is the theory that society can be improved through planned breeding for, quote, desirable traits like intelligence and industriousness. In the early 20th century, eugenics ideas were popular among highly educated, privileged, and mostly white Americans. Margaret Sanger pronounced her belief in and alignment with the eugenics movement many times in her writings, especially in the scientific journal Birth Control Review. So, the organization that she started doesn't even deny that she is a racist eugenicist, a mass murdering racist eugenicist. Okay. And they mentioned at the end, you know, that she pronounced her beliefs in alignment with the eugenics movement many times in her writings, especially in the scientific journal Birth Control Review. That's her magazine. She wanted to murder people so badly and get the word out there so far and wide that she started her own magazine. I've never been committed to anything that much in my life that I wanted to go start my own magazine. That's crazy. So look, because Sanger's interest in medicine was just a veil to hide her deep-seated racism, she often spoke at KKK rallies, like actual ones, and at the wives of KKK meeting. I guess there's a, I didn't realize there's the wives of the KKK meeting. I didn't realize that. I guess when the husbands are all out burning crosses and stuff, the wives are like, what are we going to do? You know, so maybe they have meetings too, I guess. I don't know. But so she spoke at both, at the wives of the KKK meetings and at the KKK rallies, you know, because they had a lot in common. They did, neither of them like black people. And if it were up to them, there wouldn't be any black people. So she found her target audience, and it was the Klan. Okay. So she would speak there in order to drum up for, support for her mission in solving what she described as, quote, the Negro problem. So, and now at these rallies, she spoke openly about how she agreed with the 1927 Buck versus Bell decision, in which the Supreme Court ruled that states could forcibly sterilize people that they deemed unfit without their knowledge or consent. She's in favor of this. So you, again, probably not a surprise, but the Supreme Court in 1927 in the United States said that that states, if they chose to, could continue to forcibly sterilize people deemed unfit without their knowledge. They didn't say that they could start doing it. We'll get to this in a minute, but in 1927 they said, all you states that have already been doing this, it's fine. And she would give speeches going around saying, see, look, even the Supreme Court agreed with this idea. And so what are we doing here? Let's get to killing, you know? Let's get to it. Because the Supreme Court, or sterilization at least, you know, but really, unfit, deemed unfit, define unfit. I mean, Margaret Sanger is unfit, right? I mean, who's in charge of the list? Because I got a lot of people I would put on the unfit list, but something tells me that her list was more, I don't know, color coordinated than mine would be. So in order to solve the quote Negro problem that she's adamant about, she started in 1939 a group called the Negro Project with black leaders like W.E.B. Du Bois and Reverend Adam Clayton Powell and Mary McLeod Bethune. These were three powerful black voices inside the black community, but also I think W.E.B. Du Bois was like a Boulé guy. Pretty sure he was like a wolf in sheep's clothing. You know what I mean? I think he was not exactly, he might have been black on the, he was black on the outside, white on the inside, you know. Because he sold these people. These three people that she put together for the Negro Project, think of it like this. They were the Reverend Al Sharpton and Reverend Jesse Jacksons of their time, right? False heroes, leading marches, in the case of Jesse and Al, leading marches of the black community that for 40 years that apparently just went in one gigantic circle because they're right back where they started from, having gained nothing and accomplished nothing except making those two guys extremely rich, giving Al Sharpton, who was a rat for the FBI, giving him his own television show on MSNBC, and Jesse Jackson was the guy who gave the signal to the shooter to murder Martin Luther King. Go if you want to research Jesse Jackson, Memphis removes his tie. That'll take you down a rabbit hole. All right, but that's who these guys were. All right, so these were the phony black sellout leaders that Margaret Sanger teamed up with and said, listen. She said, in order for this Negro Project, which might as well have been called the Negro Problem Project, we're going to need to put black doctors and black nurses in charge of birth control clinics, not white doctors and white nurses, because there's already too much distrust in the black community towards white people in general, of course. Geographically, I would say, you know, depending on where you're living. I mean, during this time, if you were in the South, there was zero trust for black people towards white people. But even the doctors too, you're not going to try. I mean, you might have to be a black person going to a white doctor, but are you going to fully trust them? No way. No way. You don't know. You don't know if their racial prejudices are brought into the operating room with them, right? So it makes sense that if you wanted to really get to the black community with trust, the best way to do that would be to make sure that the black doctors and the black nurses were on board with this project too, right? So that's what they set about doing, so that the women that were going to these clinics would obviously feel more comfortable, right? I mean, I think this is reasonable to do. Absolutely diabolical. But if you're trying to do that, if you're trying to convince black women to get on board with a program of covert sterilization, you're going to need to have the black doctors be involved in greasing skids for you so that you can get that concept cooking in a way that white doctors would never be able to do. So, but again, she hated black people, right? She wanted them gone. She worked with these people. She worked with W.E.B. Du Bois and Reverend Powell and Mary Bethune. But if it were up to her, I mean, she would have pushed them in front of a moving train the first chance she got. And this is a quote from Margaret Sanger, or this is Margaret Sanger quoted by Linda Gordon in a book called Woman's Body, Woman's Right, that was written in 1976. Linda Gordon quoted Margaret Sanger in the book, so it's a quote of a quote. So this will give you an idea of how Margaret Sanger felt about the black community. Quote, "The most successful educational approach to the blacks is through a religious appeal. We do not want word to get out that we want to exterminate the black population, and the minister is the man who can straighten out that idea if it ever occurs to their more rebellious members. If any of these people start to figure it out, you know, we're in deep shit unless we've got the black reverends on our side saying, oh, no, there's nothing to see here. Everything is fine. You know, if you've got that, then you get cover." So she racist, genocidal maniac for sure. But she wasn't dumb. She understood strategy. You know, she was very thoughtful in regard to that, you know, because she wanted to make sure that her plan was put into place. So she started something called the American Birth Control League. And I guess they play the National Birth Control League in the World Series each year. I don't know. I mean, who knows? Now pitching Satan, right? So she started this American Birth Control League, and she also started the Birth Control Federation of America, which later got rebranded as Planned Parenthood Federation of America in 1942. So when I say that it started when she started it in 1916 in Brooklyn, it wasn't called Planned Parenthood back then. It was something else. It became American Birth Control League, where they used the designated hitter. And then she started the Birth Control Federation of America, and then that got rebranded and it became Planned Parenthood. So just so you follow sort of the chain of names here. This is a She's one of the most quotable people. I've got a million quotes from her in my Octopus book because she's like, she just doesn't care, you know, or you know, I think she fully, honestly believed in this. And because she was such a true believer, she didn't have a filter. And she also probably didn't think that black people could read or would understand what she was doing. I mean, she was deeply, deeply racist. So let me, this is from her book that she wrote called The Pivot of Civilization. This is a quote. "Eugenics suggests the reestablishment of the balance between the fit and the unfit. The birth rate among the finer stocks of humanity is to be increased by awakening among the fit, the realization of the dangers of a lessened birth rate in proportion to the reckless breeding of the unfit." If Margaret Sanger were alive today, she would have been put through the World Economic Forum's Young Global Leader Program and then installed at Johns Hopkins as a director of research or something like that. I mean, because these beliefs are disgusting and insane, but almost universally shared by this global elite that wants to, you know, it's, we talk a lot about world government on this show. It's in the intro, you know, centuries long plan for world domination. You know, so we talk about global government, but when you talk about global government, you are also almost always talking about depopulation. And depopulation has a bad name because it implies that you're murdering people, which you are. So you have to come up with a more sciencey name called eugenics. And eugenics has been the name for a long, long time. But eugenics is then people start to figure out, oh, that's also mass murder. We don't like that. And so they've rebranded yet again to transhumanism. So transhumanism is eugenics and eugenics is depopulation. They're all the same thing. Just choose your name. So when I jokingly say that Margaret Sanger would have been on, you know, a board member of the World Economic Forum, that's because they're pushing for a fourth industrial revolution on their website, which is the blending of man and machine into transhumanism. So they are pushing for eugenics. They are pushing for depopulation. They can't come right out and say it because it looks bad on a t-shirt, but that's what they are pushing for. So Margaret Sanger would have definitely been involved in this. She, Sanger referred to black people as human weeds. Holy shit. Human weeds. And also spawning human beings who never should have been born. I mean,
it's rough, right? It's right. You expect this sort of talk from David Rockefeller or one of the Rothschilds or Alfred Milner or Cecil Rhodes. You expect this sort of talk, and you probably get this sort of talk. You just, I don't know. I mean, socially, you kind of don't expect women to be saying this, right? Maybe we should. Maybe I shouldn't be so sexist, you know, in my assumptions. But for those of you in Australia, I have a special treat for you because she hated the Aborigines. I mean, she hated them. I spent a couple of weeks in Australia, and I remember being on an airplane, and I was right on the aisle, and a guy came on who's Aborigine. It was the first time I had ever seen one in real life, and I was like, whoa. I mean, Crocodile Dundee, I think, had just come out, or came out, I don't know, maybe soon afterwards, but I was like mesmerized. It was the most interesting looking person I'd ever seen, you know? And then I wound up in Alice Springs, where it's like, there's a ton of Aborigines there. And I wandered around and looked at everyone. And I was fascinated. I thought they were kind of magical, to be honest with you. You know, they're kind of like kind of a magical vibe, especially the ones that are like live with the land and all that. Margaret Sanger, she had a much different experience in Australia than I had. She said that, quote, that the Aboriginal Australian, the lowest known species of the human family, just a step higher than the chimpanzee in brain development. Holy shit. I mean, you know, there's always that sort of white person insult calling black people monkeys and everything, you know? Like when the CDC put out monkeypox and they're like, we're not racist. And everyone's like, nobody said you were. But like Margaret Sanger just came straight out and said, oh, the Aborigines are basically chimpanzees. I mean, that is, that's a bold statement, man. I can't sign off on that, Margaret, you crazy lunatic. Okay, let's get into some stats. You know, I love stats. 80% of Planned Parenthood facilities are located in minority neighborhoods. We just talked about that, and I would suggest that ain't accidental. That is because when you've got a large percentage of black people living in minority neighborhoods, thus the name minority neighborhoods, and you've got Margaret Sanger working on the Negro problem through her group, the Negro Project, and that she's talking openly about wanting to murder the black community, then it's not accidental. When 80% of your 600 facilities are located in minority neighborhoods, it's just logic at that point. Twisted, genocidal logic. 74% of abortions in Mississippi were performed on black mothers. 3 out of 4. That's according to the CDC. Again, and for the record, since we've done so many shows on COVID and, you know, vaccines and all this stuff, I don't trust the CDC at all. So when I say that it's posted by the CDC, I don't say that as like, see, they're the arbiter of truth. I don't believe that they are. I'm simply stating that I didn't get this number from, you know, I didn't just pull this number out of thin air. I got it from their work on it. So you can take that and take that for what you will. Non-Hispanic white women, non-Hispanic, it's a weird thing to call it non-Hispanic white women. You mean white women? Had the lowest rate, the lowest abortion rate. Black women were almost 4 times higher for getting abortions at Planned Parenthood. That is not good. So let's talk about this abortion rate. And again, we're getting into the topic of abortion. We already have. And I'm not trying to make some sort of I'm not trying to be politically divisive here. And I'm not pro or against or whatever. This is a topic that I am staying out of because I think this is a topic that a lot of women should discuss. So I'm not here to say these. I have no energy one way or the other. I have very little energy, I should say. Abortion rate means abortions, this is abortions per 1,000 live births, okay? So for every 1,000 live children that are born, for white women, there are 117 abortions, okay? For every 1,000 Hispanic babies that are born, there are 170 abortions. For every 1,000 live black babies that are born, there are 386 abortions. Okay, so the number is more than is more than white women plus Hispanic women combined. It's more than triple what the white women, it's almost quadruple what the white women are. Oh my God. So the calculation on this means that 38.6% of all pregnant black women abort their babies. I just can't even wrap my head around that. But that's Margaret Sanger for you. Again, nobody accused her of being dumb. You know, they didn't accuse her of not understanding a strategy and a plan. And yeah, she's been dead for a long, long time, but Planned Parenthood and that ideology remains. I don't care what they put on their website. We know what they are. They're a depopulation outfit. That's what they are. These are the stats. These aren't stats from the 1920s. These are stats from 3 years ago. Okay, so we've got a problem here. The CDC said that 620,327 abortions were performed in 2020. A different reporting group, a group called the Guttmacher Institute, said that 620,000 was low, that the real number they had was 930,000. Just to put this in perspective, back in 1990, that number was 1.6 million. So things have happened. Maybe birth control has been more. I don't know exactly why it's gone from 1.6 million down to 930,000. But I mean, an assumption could be made that maybe it's birth control, reduce that access to birth control. Again, soft depopulation. Oh my God, this is such a disgusting statistic. Abortion is the leading cause of death for blacks in America. Wow. 80% of Planned Parenthood's revenue comes from performing abortions and not basic health care for poor or disadvantaged women. This, according to Planned Parenthood CEO Cecile Richards, that they're not denying this. This isn't some misunderstanding. 80% of their revenue comes from abortions. They're an abortion factory. That's what Planned Parenthood is. So when they talk about, well, actually, we're just about helping the basic health care for poor and disadvantaged women. No, you're not. 4 out of 5 of every dollars that comes into your organization comes in from abortions. Well, I should say 4 out of every $5 of revenue that they generate, because Planned Parenthood was given $543.7 million in 2017 from the taxpayers through government grants. So not only are they running a profitable abortion factory, but they're also getting $500 million a year from the government to do that. Again, if the numbers were reversed and 80% of their revenue was coming from healthcare for poor, disadvantaged women, a case could be made that government subsidies of $500 million a year might be warranted. But that's not the case. Only 20% comes from that. The other 80% comes from aborting babies. And I'll tell you now, they've got a new revenue stream. Do you know what that is? Do you want to know what their newest revenue stream is? Again, admitted to by their CEO, selling fetal tissue and body parts. That's bad. I mean, it's bad enough, the ghoulish business that you're in, but to then take those fetal tissues and body part and sell them, I don't know. This is a tough one for me, man. This is a real hard episode. Okay, let's lighten it up a little bit. Not much, but a little bit. And let's have some fun. This game is gonna be, name who said this. Okay, I'm going to read you a quote, and then in your mind, while I'm reading you this quote, I want you to figure out whose mouth these words came out of. And it is a woman, and it is a woman that you know very well, who is known around the world. Everybody knows who this woman is. Okay. She said the following, and you tell me if you can, in your mind, guess. I'll tell you at the end. Quote, I'm not going to do her voice either because you'll know immediately. Now, I have to tell you that it was a great privilege when I was told that I would receive this award. I admire Margaret Sanger enormously, her courage, her tenacity, her vision. And when I think about what she did all those years ago in Brooklyn, taking on archetypes, taking on attitudes and accusations, flowing from all directions, I'm really in awe of her. Think of a woman that you know in the public light who would consider Margaret Sanger to be somebody that she is in awe of. I know. It's an easy one. It's Hillary Clinton. I know. Racist, psychopath Hillary Clinton, in awe of Margaret Sanger, a woman who made it her mission to murder as many Black people as she could. Undeniable, on record, in her magazines, in her books, in interviews, and in letters back and forth to the Third Reich. Hillary Clinton. Now, I have to tell you, it was a great privilege when I was told, I was going to cackle and then you would know who it was. I was told that I would receive this award. I admire Margaret Sanger enormously. Oh, I bet you do, you racist bitch. Her courage, her courage and tenacity while murdering all those darkies, her vision. Oh, shit. I mean, Hillary Clinton may be Margaret Sanger's reincarnation, if you think about it. It's possible. We can't rule it out. Sanger believed that couples should have to obtain a permit before becoming parents. She thought people had no legal right to do so without approval and also per child. So they'd have to get approval per child. She wanted a birth quota for purposes of social planning. And first on her list of people she hated were the Blacks and anybody that was not white. But once you got past that group, the next people on her list that she despised, Catholics. You know why? They have a lot of kids. And if there's one thing that Margaret Sanger hated, it was kids. But also this idea of having to obtain a permit before becoming parents, this is regurgitated later in 1977 in Paul Ehrlich's book, The Population Bomb. I quoted that lunatic in The Octopus as well. That guy is out of his fucking mind. He was talking about adding sterilants to the water supply and then having the government do a lottery system where if you wanted to have kids, you could apply to the government and they'd put you in a lottery system. And if they pulled your name out, then they would give you the antidote to reverse the sterilization chemicals that you had had in your water. I mean, this guy is nuts. Okay. So of course he was, one of Obama's and Hillary Clinton's favorite people, Paul Ehrlich, author, lunatic, depopulation expert. When you do research and Sanger is somebody that's been on my radar for a long, long time. And when you write about in that Octopus book, I had to mention her. So you go through and you find all these quotes from her and some of them are so unbelievable that you think there's no way this can be real. So I'm going to read you a quote from her. And just understand that I went and found the book, and I found it's a book written in 1920 called Woman and the New Race, 1920. This quote came from chapter 5. It is in the book. It is not a mistake. It is not a misprint. I'm going to read it to you. You're going to think that I'm making this up because you'd think there is no way somebody would say this, let alone write it in a book and publish it for the rest of the world to see forever. But Margaret Sanger did it. So just get your head wrapped around this quote right now. And it is wild. Quote, the most serious evil of our times is that of encouraging the bringing into the world of large families. The most immoral practice of the day is breeding too many children. The most merciful thing that a large family does to one of its infant members is to kill it. That's what she said in a book. This is the founder of Planned Parenthood. Are we clear on what the mission of Planned Parenthood is? That's what I said. When you read that, you go, this has to be fake. I'm not going to believe it. And I can't talk about this. And I can't attach my name to a quote this insane unless I have documented 100% proof that she said it. So I found the book and it's in there. And I read it with my own eyes. And you can find it too. Woman and the New Race, written in 1920. You go to chapter 5, read chapter 5. Just read it. I'm really in awe of her. Hillary Clinton, I'm really in awe of her. I admire Margaret Sanger enormously, her courage, her tenacity. I'll read it again. The most serious evil of our times is that of encouraging the bringing into the world of large families. The most immoral practice of the day is breeding too many children. The most merciful thing that the large family does to one of its infant members is to kill it. I can't even wrap my head around that. That's some Nazi shit right there, right? That's a bridge too far. Speaking of Nazis, let's discuss Sanger's close friend, Mr. Ernst Rudin. He sounds like a good old upstanding Nazi. I wonder what old Ernst Rudin did for the Third Reich. What was his job? Was he in charge of planning the roadways of the Autobahn? Was he in charge of logistics and armaments? No. He was Hitler's director of genetic sterilization, who was the founder of the Nazi Society for Racial Hygiene and director of the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute for Genealogy in Munich. It's hard to say. Margaret Sanger published Ernst Rudin's article in her magazine titled Eugenic Sterilization, An Urgent Need, where he called for, in his article, for propaganda to disguise the sterilization campaign. Now, again, keep this in mind when we're talking about Planned Parenthood. This was Ernst Rudin talking to America, telling America how they could improve their sterilization program. And so this wasn't a Nazi talking about how the Nazis were going to do it, though they, I'm sure they used propaganda as well. But this was specifically directed at the American audience. So he said that he was calling for propaganda to disguise the sterilization campaign and that the propaganda should be directed against medical directors in institutions and schools, medical officers in health, and also at private practitioners in America specifically. So he's writing an article for Margaret Sanger's magazine saying, if you want to do this eugenics and sterilization program, you got to lie to the doctors. Okay. You got to lie to the doctors at all levels. First, you got to lie to the directors, the medical directors at the institutions and the schools, right? Start there with the institutions and schools. Then they'll teach all the future doctors about why it's a good idea to do this. But don't come right out and talk about sterilization. It's got to be propaganda, right? So it's got to be very subtle. And also then you want to target medical officers and health. So, people that are running like your medical organizations, like World Health Organization, not that it existed back then, but you get it. And also then the private practitioners, then all of the doctors in private practice, get to those doctors, but be subtle, use propaganda, meaning lie to them, tell them it's going to be great when it's actually not, tell them it does something else when it doesn't. And that's how you do it. So Ernst Rudin's Nazi program force sterilized up to 500,000 Germans. So again, this was a guy who had a Nazi ideology of let's just sterilize the feeble-minded so they don't reproduce and clog up the Third Reich with a bunch of, dumb people having dumb kids, And if you don't take care of them, if you don't, prune the rose bushes, you're going to have problems here. But I want to be clear that the Nazis race hygiene, they had a German name for it, but it translated to race hygiene concept, was taken from Margaret Sanger. It was her idea. It came from America. It was racial hygiene wasn't even a thing in the Third Reich until they got a hold of some of Margaret Sanger's work. And they went, oh, we like what you've done here. Yeah, racial hygiene. That's a very clinical way to talk about killing anyone that doesn't look like us. This is great. So again, this Margaret Sanger, 1932, pre-Hitler by a year, pre-World War II by, 7 years, to give certain dysgenic groups in our population their choice of segregation, meaning concentration camps, or sterilization. Her concept was that you find these groups and you give them two choices. Either we sterilize you or we put you in camps. 1932, not 1942. The German sterilization program, of which Margaret Sanger is talking about, either sterilize them or put them in camps. The German version of the sterilization program started 2 years after Margaret Sanger's concentration camps or sterilization comment. She was early. In fact, the American sterilization program was first on the scene and was used as proof of concept for the Nazis years later. There is this mistaken belief that the Nazis invented the idea of forced sterilization, concentration camps for the feeble-minded, and medical extermination. They did not invent it. They might have perfected it. But you know who invented it? America. America was first. In 1907, the state of Indiana passed a forced sterilization law for, quote, mental defectives. Indiana led the charge on this. It was legal in 1907 for forced sterilization, as long as you were deemed mental defectives. To put this in perspective, when this law was being passed, Adolf Hitler was 18 years old. Okay. So again, I'm not trying to defend what Adolf Hitler did, obviously. I'm just trying to say that it wasn't his idea. He wasn't the first to come up with this. He wasn't sitting in the, in his mountain lair up there plotting and scheming for all this stuff. He was reading, and the Reich was reading the work of Margaret Sanger. And they were looking at what had been going on in America with their eugenics program and saying, oh, yeah, you guys are taking this to a whole new level. Before the Nazis even started their forced sterilization program, there were at least 17 U.S. states, including California, that had forced sterilization laws. I'm not talking about optional sterilization. Like, we're going to make it an option if you want to come in and get sterilized so you don't have any more kids because you've had enough kids and you don't want to have them. I'm not talking about optional sterilization. I'm saying that there were 17 states that had forced sterilization laws, meaning the state can force you to get sterilized. 17 of those states in the United States were up and running with that codified into law before the Nazis even came up with the idea, before the Nazis even tried it. In fact, the only reason why the Nazis tried it was because in order to convince a million people in Germany that like this is where we're going, they had to be able to show proof of concept. And the proof of concept they used was America, actually. Here's a document on the Nazi depopulation program. Quote, the leaders in the German sterilization movement state repeatedly that their legislation was formulated after careful study of the California experiment, as reported by Mr. Gosney and Dr. Paul Popenoe. It would have been impossible, they say, to undertake such a venture involving some 1 million people without drawing heavily upon previous experience elsewhere in California. They mentioned two names in there, Mr. Gosney and Dr. Paul Popenoe. Dr. Popenoe was a leader in the eugenics movement in America, and his articles were often published in Margaret Sanger's magazine. They were close. They are ideologically aligned. He was a doctor talking about how we have to move this sterilization program. We don't just need to have it legalized in more than these 17 states. We need to have it legalized everywhere. And we need to really ramp it up because we're way behind on this. And, so the question is, okay, Dr. Popno, how many Americans do you believe need to be sterilized in order for us to get back on track with where we need to be? His answer was between 5 million and 10 million Americans. Okay. This was back in 1930. I'm not really sure what the population of America was in 1930. It certainly wasn't 340 million. Let's say it was 200 million. It's probably less, but let's just say it was 200 million. He wanted to murder up to 5% of the population. He wanted to sterilize up to 5% of the population, I should say. So the Nazi sterilization program was entirely made possible because of the California experiment. And the California experiment happened because Dr. Popno's plan was heavily promoted by Margaret Sanger in her magazines and normalized through her channels. Okay. Let's wrap up with this last part here. If you aren't already on the ledge, ready to throw yourself off a building after hearing this one, sorry guys, I know it's a bit dark, but again, would you rather not know, or would you, it's like, do you want to know real history or do you want to know some horseshit version of it? So, let's talk about what's going on in sort of the modern day Planned Parenthood. I talked about the statistics, but there is a name that you would recognize that has his fingerprints all over Planned Parenthood as well, and that is Bill Gates. But not the Bill Gates that you might be thinking. Actually, William Gates Sr., Bill's dad. He served on the Planned Parenthood's board during its early years after fully rebranding itself from the American Eugenics Society and becoming formerly the Planned Parenthood of America. He was involved in that. So it makes me wonder, why is Junior so involved in vaccines? Why does he care about vaccines so much? You know, his dad was a board of director for Planned Parenthood, a rebranded American eugenics operation. And it stands to reason that the poison apple doesn't fall too far from the tree when it comes to the Gates family. I mean, I wonder what they sat around the dinner table and talked about. How we can thin out the herd some more, right? So you've got Senior deeply involved in Planned Parenthood and their genocide. Then you've got Junior doing his best with sterilization programs as well through Gavi and the World Health Organization, of which he is the second largest contributor of financial resources to the World Health Organization, a group that, let me remind you, was busted putting sterilants in the tetanus vaccines in Kenya. And when they got busted, they denied it at first. They later confessed that they had been doing it and fully admitted that it had been a program that had been in place for well over a decade, and it wasn't limited to Kenya. It also included many of the countries that were on Kissinger's 1974 National Security Memorandum 200, which identified 13 countries, of which the United States' ultimate and overriding goal should be that of depopulation. That's what Planned Parenthood is. Side note, you want to know who was running Planned Parenthood? Only for about 8 months, because she got thrown out, but it's a newer name, but it's a name you might recognize. Good old Lena Wynne. You remember Lena Wynne? As Frank from Quite Frankly calls the homunculus, that garbage human being who always winds up on television. She's a young global leader from the World Economic Forum and also a Rhodes Scholar. And also, on a side note, if you want to put your tinfoil hat on real good and tight for this one, go back and find an interview that is conducted at the site of the fake Boston bombing. And look at who they interview to tell us what happened. None other than good old Lena Wynne. So we can add crisis actor to her resume as well. But let's wrap up with this quote from Margaret Sanger. This is in a letter that she wrote to Dr. Clarence Gamble, December 10th, 1939. Quote, "We do not want word to go out that we want to exterminate the Negro population. Don't worry, you racist old bitch. I won't tell anyone, I promise." Hey, if you like this episode, you can take the additional step right now of sharing it with your friends and family. You can follow me on Twitter at macroaggression. You can go to the website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. Thanks, everybody. I'll talk to you again soon.